name is Holly Hedgepeth, and I'm with the Cancer Services Program of Columbia and Greene County, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. This morning, we've got several interviews for you. Today, we'll hear from Richard Webster, the legal director of Riverkeeper, about how that group opposes a transmission line along the Hudson River. And we'll also hear from Blair Horner from NYPIRG, discussing the New York State redistricting that's been proposed this week and will be voted on by the legislature soon. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
The waves controlled on air, in air, channel connection, and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's-how-you-cans. Visit DedicatedPresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Victorian-era Valentines of Schaefer, Minnesota. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Ted Remsnyder is reporting for Columbia Greene Media that Greene County Sheriff's Deputy Jay Lucas has been endorsed by the Catskill Republican Committee to fill the vacancy on the Greene County Legislature created by the death of Jack Keller on December 30th. The legislature will consider the nomination during a special meeting on February 2nd. The Town of Catskill Republican Committee was tasked with nominating a replacement to serve out the rest of Keller's unexpired three-year term on the board. Greene County Legislator Matt Lavera, who represents Catskill and serves as the chair of the Catskill GOP, announced this week that the committee had chosen Lucas to take the seat. Lavera said, quote, "Jay is a dedicated member of the community, serving as a sheriff's deputy for many years, and I know he will do a great job continuing his service to the community at the legislative level," unquote. Lucas, 67, has been employed by the sheriff's office for 36 years, but he is slated to retire in advance of the legislature's vote on his confirmation. Quote, "It's really hard for me to give that up," unquote, Lucas said. Quote, "But now that I got the nod, I will still continue to serve the people of the town of Catskill and Greene County," unquote. Lucas has been a resident of Palinville since 1960, has served as a committee member for the Catskill Republican Committee for 28 years, and is a lifetime member of the Palinville Fire Department. He has worked for years in the county office building in Catskill, securing the first floor entrance. Lucas said it would be particularly meaningful to him to fill Keller's seat. Quote, "I knew him pretty well," unquote, he said. who had I met him probably 10 years ago, and we became friends, unquote. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said, quote, since Jack was elected from Catskill, that committee took applications and did interviews. They'll make a recommendation to the legislature, and the board will affirm or deny, unquote. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
More information continues to come out about the proposal for congressional redistricting from the New York legislature, including maps of what could be the new district. The biggest changes locally include Rensselaer County, which was previously entirely in the 19th Congressional District, but would now be split in half, with everything above North Greenbush, Sand Lake, and Berlin switching to the 21st Congressional District, currently represented by Republican Elise Stefanik. Albany County was previously all the 20th Congressional District, now represented by Democrat Paul Tonko. The new proposal moves Albany County towns Coeymans and Bethlehem from the 20th District to the 19th District, currently represented by Antonio Delgado. Schoharie County moves entirely from the 19th to the 21st Congressional District under the proposal. And only the northwest corners of Dutchess County remains in the 19th Congressional District, with the rest of Dutchess County moving to the 18th Congressional District, now represented by Sean Maloney. Redistricting occurs every 10 years after the census, and an independent redistricting commission was supposed to do that work. But that body was designed by the legislature to be toothless, so when they failed to agree on new district maps, the legislature took over, proposing these maps. Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, who is running in the 19th congressional election this year, called the redistricting process led by Democrat state lawmakers, and I quote, a scam to begin with. The Democrats in the legislature wanted to control the outcome, end quote. He told reporters on January 31st, and I quote, at the end of the day, I am hopeful the courts will step in because this is a blatant effort to gerrymander for no other purpose, end quote. The New York State Constitution states, and I quote, districts shall not be drawn to discourage competition or for the purpose of favoring or disfavoring incumbents or other particular candidates or political parties, end quote. But the courts have never turned down a map approved by the legislature. Jeffrey Weiss, who heads the New York Census and Redistricting Institute, said, and I quote, the state courts are really going to be reluctant to overturn a state legislatively enacted map, end quote. But even if the courts agree to the new maps, that does not mean they are fair. Susan Lerner, executive director of Common Cause New York, said in a statement, and I quote, these lines are so heavily gerrymandered, they will be non-competitive. It is a major disservice to voters who were first denied any hope of a truly independent process 10 years ago when the so-called independent commission was conceived, end quote. The legislature plans to vote on the proposal later this week.
Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper that the Hudson Board of Education selected Willett M. Jones to serve as its new president and Lakia Walker as the newest member of the board at the board's January 18th meeting. Mark DePace, who joined the board in May, was elected vice president. The shuffle was caused by the departure of Kerry Oddy, a 10-year member of the board, serving as president for a little more than half of that time. Interim Superintendent Maria L. Suttmeyer thanked Oddy for her service and presented her with a travel bag to, quote, take wherever life takes you, unquote. Oddy thanked the board and said of her service, quote, it's been an experience and a joy, unquote. Jones has served on the board for 5.5 years. She became vice president in 2018. Jones moved to Hudson when she was 2 and graduated from Hudson High School in 1988. Her 4 children attended Hudson schools, and she has worked as a parent coordinator for community schools. DePace owns a company that produces commercials, and he has lived in Hudson since 2018. His son has attended Montgomery C. Smith Elementary School. Walker has an MA in school counseling and has been employed by Questar 3 BOCES for 20 years. She lives in Hudson, and her children attend the Hudson schools. Walker declared, quote, I love this school, and my kids love this school. I'm always looking at ways to improve things. Changes are coming, and I want to be part of them, unquote. 3 other people expressed interest in filling the vacancy, Kirsten Gustafson, Katie Hardy, and Jennifer Daly. Read more about the story in the Columbia paper.
Natasha Von Holdridge reports for Columbia Green Media that the toxic forever chemical PFOS has been found in the drinking water at New Lebanon Junior Senior High School, slightly above the state threshold. Test results from last spring found the chemical perfluorooctanoic acid in the drinking water at the high school at 11 parts per trillion, higher than the state's acceptable level of 10 ppt. New Lebanon School Superintendent Andrew Court wrote to parents, and I quote, "New Lebanon High School is working with the Columbia County and New York State Departments of Health on a compliance schedule that includes steps to reduce the level of PFOS. The district will be setting up several water drinking stations around the junior-senior high school and posting signs on each water source reporting that the water is not drinkable. The junior-senior high school's kitchen staff will be cooking using a different water source," end quote. Columbia County Department of Health Director Jack Mabb said the county is helping to clean up the water. Mabb said, and I quote, "New Lebanon is working with an engineer who is working with our engineer in terms of filtration. The two alternatives are new filtration or to build another well. It appears they are moving in the direction of filtration," end quote. New Lebanon is not the only local school with toxic drinking water. PFOS was found in the town of Cairo's water in 2016 and 2017. The test in 2016 found 13.3 parts per trillion in the town's well water and 11.3 ppt in water treated with chlorine. Cairo's drinking water goes to the Cairo Durham Elementary School. Little had been done to that situation, which was caused by a firefighting training center that used foam containing PFOS to train in putting out fires. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that more than 30% of New York voters are considering moving out of the state because they are frustrated with state politics, according to a poll released February 1st by the nonpartisan organization Unite New York. The poll was conducted by John Zogby Strategies. The survey offers some insight into the frustration felt by voters, which has been a contributor to the steady flow of out-migration for the last several decades. Martin Babinek, the founder of Unite New York, said, quote, "This poll demonstrates that our state's approach to public policy is at the heart of both out-migration and the lack of confidence in the political system. These issues cut across party lines and state geography, with the New Yorkers clamoring for more say in how their government operates, who will represent them, and for how long," unquote. The poll found nearly half respondents, 46%, believe the state is on the wrong track, with 37% saying it is on the right track. Two-thirds of voters, meanwhile, are supportive of opening primaries to voters who are not registered in a party. The poll also found more than 75% of voters would support term limits and changes to the campaign finance system. The poll also found nearly 65% of voters are also considering leaving New York because of high taxes, as well as the regulatory and political environment. Zogby also found that Governor Kathy Hochul currently holds a 42-point lead over fellow Democrat, New York City public advocate Jemani Williams. On the GOP side, U.S. Representative Lee Zeldin is ahead of Andrew Giuliani by 2 points. Hochul leads Zeldin in a general election 51-33%. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Masara Makati and Kathleen Moore report in the Times Union that a number of books and signs in the Bethlehem Public Library were defaced with vulgar right-wing political stickers last weekend. Library Director Joffrey Kirkpatrick said a handful of stickers critical of President Joe Biden were found on covers of former President Barack Obama's book, A Promised Land, and Robert DiAngelo's White Fragility, and on a sign in the library's New York Times bestseller section. The stickers read, and I quote, FJB, end quote, and I quote, Let's Go Brandon, end quote, both vulgar terms against the current president. The stickers were removed from the books in the Southern Albany County Library. Tim Burke, executive director of the Upper Hudson Library System, said, and I quote, It's the first time we've seen it in quite a few years, probably a decade or more. Not stickers so much, but flyers or pieces of paper advertising a particular radical viewpoint put in books about the Holocaust. There have been occasional instances of this over the country. Usually, it's driven by some political agenda. Aside from a few stickers, no one is asking to ban any library books yet. Burke said, and I quote, "We know that this current political climate has generated more material challenges across the country. We haven't seen any in Upper Hudson at this point, but we have been working with the libraries to be sure they're prepared to respond to these challenges." Read more about this story in the Times Union.
And Mid-Hudson News reports that the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater Organization has named David Toman of New Paltz as its new executive director. Toman takes over from acting executive director Steve Stani, who will stay with the organization as board president. The nonprofit organization based in Beacon works to protect the Hudson River and has struggled with financial issues and has not had a permanent leader for a number of years. But Toman is suited to right the ship with an accounting background and working for 9 years as chief financial officer and vice president for operations at Mohawk Preserve. Quote, "I was the right candidate at the right time for them. Without speaking on their behalf, I believe the board of directors were strongly interested in somebody that would have my skill set to help guide them through this challenge and see what we can do to improve upon it," unquote, he said. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 42 degrees. Wednesday night, a chance of rain, mainly after 1 a.m. It will be cloudy with a temperature low of around 33 degrees. And on Thursday, rain is likely, possibly mixed with snow before 7 a.m., then all rain after that. The temperature high will be around 41 degrees. Thursday night, rain possibly mixed with freezing rain before 1 a.m., then sleet after 4 a.m. with a temperature low of around 25 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
On Groundhog's Day, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC, including at 10 a.m. the Synth Eclectico Show listens to tracks from Chris Christodoulou, Stefan Phillips, and Les Motels, among others. Then at 11 a.m., it's time for the new show from Mayuka Fujino. It's called Mirage Station, and it is made up of soundscapes floating over the horizon, aural illusions in broad daylight, distant voices transmitted. At noon, after the local news, it's time for the All Mixed Up show with John Batiste, The Five Satins, and Sonny Terry among the featured artists today. And then in the evening, we are live from everywhere. We're live from Hudson at 4 p.m. with the WGXC Afternoon Show with Vern Cross, Kamal Johnson, and others on the radio. At 7 p.m., we're live from New York City with the Off the Hook Show, simulcast on WBAI in New York, with the 2600 Hacker Crew talking about the latest technological issues. At 8 p.m., we're live back from Hudson again with Rock and Roll High School with Peter McPartland and Anya Kanovskaya. At 10 p.m., we're live from Ulster County with Jeff Economy and the Snack Point Charlie Show. And at midnight, we're live again from Ulster County with Peter Aaron's Go Go Kitty Show, simulcast from Radio Kingston in Ulster County and on WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
There are all sorts of local community events in the WGXC community calendar online, WGXC.org. You can even add your own there. There's a button called Add an Event. You press the add an event button and then fill in the blanks. And soon enough, your community calendar listing is on WGXC.org in the community calendar. And it's also being read on the radio right now, including the band Ballister comes to Kingston in April, April 13th. The international free jazz noise trio Ballister with saxophonist Dave Rempus, cellist Fred Lundberg Holm, and drummer PNL from Norway start their 2022 U.S. tour at Kingston's Tubby's. Find out more about this event, a link to Tubby's website, and more in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Moments before he's hit with a 40-foot wall of sulfuric acid that will horribly burn everything in its path. Now, that's real acid, so I want to see goggles, people.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
It's almost always safety first at the Thingularity Radio program, so don't let that happen to you. Have your questions answered by sending them to catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com and tune in every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM Acra or anytime at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, February 2nd. Early morning temperatures are 20 degrees in Smith Corner and 23 in Winchell. Things are gonna melt today. A high of 42 happens at 2 p.m. With winds reaching 13 miles per hour, conditions will settle in at cold, so layer up and prepare for a warmer afternoon. Overnight, temperatures fall to 35 degrees and rain begins after midnight. Tomorrow, the rain keeps going all day. A high of 40 degrees is expected from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 25 degrees, and precipitation changes from freezing rain to sleet to finally snow after dawn on Friday. It keeps on going, dropping a couple inches as temperatures fall to 22 degrees by dark. Overnight, snow tapers off, ending by midnight. A low of 9 degrees happens overnight, so leave those taps dripping. Saturday will be dry with a high of 24 degrees. 3 degrees overnight takes us into a dry Sunday with a high of 30. Sunset today will be at 4:56 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:03 a.m. Looking way up, we see a coronal mass ejection did hit Earth yesterday around 5:21 p.m. local time. As it moves through our wake, the chance for some leftover magnetic storms is possible today. Solar wind speed is currently 468 kilometers per second at 10 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible until dark, then fair below 15 megahertz. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 88. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ann Cooper of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Support for United Airlines. United provides
support for NPR
in cities like Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C.
Underwriting today is provided
United
by
Airlines,
Borders, Books, and Music,
Jutus, Juice Bar Blend, and by Whitney Farms, producers of a complete line of
publicradio.com. United provides just another way.
National Business Radio is rising.
National Public Radio.
National Business Radio
comes from
United Airlines,
Borders, Books, and Music,
Jutus, Juice Bar Blend.
United provides just another way.
National Business Radio is rising.
Public Radio.
National Public Radio.
Nonstop Business
Radio.com.
Public
Radio.
Non-stop business.
Underwriting today is provided by Inktomi. That's Inktomi Scaling.
National Public Radio.
At inktomi.com.
National Public Radio.
National Public Radio.
Non-stop business.
Radio.com.
National Public Radio. Non-stop business.
Should be tips, techniques, and answers.com. Soil amendments and mulches.com.
National Public Radio.
Well, lots of pretty good news there. Thanks, Joe. That report brought to you by
NationalBusinessRadio.com.
Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for sun to rot, for the tree to drop. Here's a strange and bitter cry.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
The State Assembly is proposing a new set of redistricting maps this week, but members of several New York immigrant communities say they've been left out of the process. When the bipartisan Independent Redistricting Commission failed to reach consensus last month, the job shifted to legislators. Members of the New York Immigrant Coalition say due to the IRC's failure, many immigrants feel their needs didn't get a fair hearing. Asher Ross, a strategist for NYIC Action, says they believe the proposed maps would divide communities of interest.
These maps, both for Congress and state legislature, are a mixed picture. There is certainly some gain made for immigrants and communities of color, but there also appears to have been a callous disregard for keeping many of our communities together and an overarching goal of drawing partisan maps.
Members of the coalition held a media briefing Tuesday, saying their input early in the process was ignored by the assembly. The coalition wants lawmakers to take their views into consideration before Governor Kathy Hochul approves the maps. Community activist Monyuk Yu says lawmakers need to slow down and listen to their constituents.
The state legislature is voting on a set of maps this week without public input. With the drawing of maps, there must be an open hearing process and consideration of the hours of public testimony collected by the IRC over the past few months.
Steve Romalinski, with the consulting group CUNY Mapping Services, urged coalition members to make sure their lawmakers are listening.
It's one thing for the elected officials, which is what's happening now. They're choosing who their voters are going to be. The congressional representatives will be in office for a couple of years, maybe longer if they get reelected. But everyone living in this district will have to live with these districts for another decade.
While the January 1st deadline for a final version of the maps has come and gone, lawmakers say they could be completed as late as February 28th and be in effect for the midterm elections in November. I'm Mark Richardson for New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
It's an elephant in the living room. Can we address it? It's iridescent. It don't look happy. A stampede will be the end of you. So let's move orderly toward the dance floor and begin to drop it low, hopping the bubble and pop. Letting go is a heavy rock and the struggle is obvious. Heaven knows I need a break from the daily monotonous activities. My soliloquy pay me in profit because I make you move.
I shout when them tell me to keep my voice down. Voice down. I'm out when they tell me to keep it inside. What now? When gravity tries to keep me on the ground, I touch clouds. A riot can never seem to quiet down. I shout loud. When everything else seems to cease, I know we keep it moving. When giants come round on AP-54, we keep it moving. I can't stop, won't stop, from even with the bank got. I'm on top, they try to slow me down, but that really ain't my style. You can't stop my glow, we keep it moving.
Now just move like your body want to. Everybody move like your body ought to. I won't make it to 3, better party on 2. And bring that body close, put the party on you.
It's all a bad joke, I might chuckle once, but it's a roller coaster, I'm buckled up. Fuck the bug and I'm kicking dust, stick them up. Better listen, suckers, duck in my trick and tuck. Giving up, is it written up, the surface without touching heavy plus. I'm a ninja buzzing back flips on the mattress. Wait up, listen.
Yeah. I shout when them tell me to keep my voice down, I'm out when they tell me to keep it inside. What now? When gravity tries to keep me on the ground, I touch clouds. A riot can never seem to quiet down. I shout loud. When everything else seems to cease, I know we keep it moving. When giants come round on AP-54, we keep it moving. I can't stop, won't stop. I'm even with the bank up. I'm on top. They try to slow me down, but that really ain't my style. You can't stop my flow. We keep it moving.
Just move like your body want to. Everybody move like your body ought to. I won't make it to 3, better party on 2. And bring that body close.
Picture me a letter, still composing a symphony. I'm blinded by the light, but still in control of my energy. I'm dining with my demons, pouring mimosas to toast. Seeing my growth and I'm coasting, heading toward the ocean, it's gleaming.
When everything else seems to cease, I know we keep it moving. The giants come round on AP-54, we keep it moving. I can't stop. Won't stop from Inglewood to Bangkok. I'm on top. They try to slow me down, but that really ain't my style. You can't stop my flow. We keep it moving.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Blair Horner, the executive director of NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Research Group. And we're going to talk today about the process of redrawing lines for the congressional and state assembly and Senate races. That was something that a decade ago, the New York State Constitution was amended to create a more sort of independent commission. But it looks like we're going back to a system where the party in control of the legislature, in this case now the Democrats, are actually going to be primarily right in the lines, though there is a possibility of a court challenge So Blair, why hasn't this system seemed to work the way people were hoping it was?
You know, well, I thanks for having me, Mark. I mean, 10 years ago, then Governor Andrew Cuomo really pushed for the deal that led to the constitutional amendment as part of an overall package where he signed off on the gerrymandered districts of 2012. And at the time, we criticized the deal because we thought that the commission that the governor was pushing for and that the legislature approved and was approved by the voters, calling it an independent redistricting commission would make it independent. It had equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans. And we thought that that would lead to gridlock. And unfortunately, we were right. So the commission that was originally charged with coming up with the lines for Congress and the state legislature deadlocked. And under the state constitution, for the legislature to just draw their own lines, if one party controls both houses, you need two-thirds majorities in both houses to do that. And the Democrats have it. So they're muscling through their own plans. You know, presumably within the context of what's legal, both under federal and state law. And they've done it in such a way that will advantage Democrats, it looks like, in the congressional elections coming up later this year.
You know, the media is reporting that the way the lines are drawn at the moment would increase the chances for the Democrats picking up three congressional seats. And also this morning is some notice that apparently there'd be two new Senate seats that really were based out of New York City. We are talking on Tuesday morning. I understand they're actually allegedly going to vote on Wednesday. What is the process moving forward on how this ultimately does get resolved?
Well, the legislature has, I mean, the Democrats in the legislature have the overwhelming majorities. And so under the state constitution, they'll need two-thirds votes in both houses in order to approve the congressional and state legislative proposed lines and the governor to sign off on it. So in many ways, it's just like any other bill. What makes it different is you need supermajorities to approve them. And so I assume that these will just get jammed through because the Democrats have majorities. And I presume that when they drew the lines, particularly for the state Senate and state assembly, they did it with an eye toward maintaining the needed two-thirds votes to push it through. So you're right that the Democrats in the Congress, in the congressional lines, favor Democrats. And in the state Senate, since the lines were drawn by Republicans 10 years ago, and the Democrats still ended up with a two-thirds majority, it's almost impossible for them to make lines that won't increase their already substantial majority. The assembly will probably be more or less the status quo. I haven't seen the lines yet. The bills are out, but I haven't seen the lines yet in terms of maps. But on the state Senate, I assume it's bad. And so overall, this will be a bad week for Republicans in New York.
I live in Postenkill, which for some reason seems to end up on the edge of many districts. And we apparently are going to be moved out of which now Congressman Antonio Delgado's district, which mainly flows to the south of us. Besides taking out Post and Kill and other places from the district, you know, they seem to be adding on Binghamton and Utica in order to increase the chances that a Democrat Delgado would be able to maintain the seat. And Mark Malonaro, I believe the present county executive in Dutchess County and former Republican candidate for governor is saying, I'm going to sue on this because clearly this is intended to help Delgado. In fact, they actually move Claudia Tenney, a Republican, into Delgado's district, although now she's saying she's going to run in a new southern district. How does the court, you know, actually review what the legislature ends up doing on this? What's their standard of determine, yeah, this is fair?
Well, I mean, generally speaking, the courts defer to the legislature to agree to whatever lines they come up with, generally speaking, both state and federal. There are some walls of the sandbox in which the legislature can play. And on the federal side, for example, every congressional district has to have essentially the same number of people in them. Otherwise, it could be viewed as unconstitutional, would be viewed as unconstitutional because of the federal standard is one person, one vote. There had been voting rights protections built into federal law But they went away when the Supreme Court said that we don't need them anymore. And although I would disagree with that analysis, that makes it harder, I think, to bring voting rights challenges to the district lines. On the state constitutional side, under federal law, the state is basically allowed districts that have plus or minus 5% of in terms of population deviations, because state constitutional requirements are different from federal. So there's, for example, state constitutional requirements about compactness, contiguousness, that are different from the federal standard. But, you know, again, the courts have never ruled in any substantial way that I know of to overturn any gerrymandered districts. I think even the Supreme Court has sort of looked the other way in terms of partisan redistricting, partisan gerrymandering in redistricting. And so I haven't looked on a block by block basis about whether or not the Democrats made mistakes, but I'm sure they are aware more than anyone that they had to do this in a way that would withstand legal challenge. Molinaro should challenge if they believes that there's unconstitutional gerrymandering that occurred. But you're right. I mean, they moved Delgado's district to try to strengthen his district in terms of Democratic enrollment. But that doesn't mean he's going to win. And under the federal laws, you don't have to live in the districts to run for Congress if indeed that's what happens with regard to as a result of redistricting. So Taney can run in the newly configured proposed Congressional District 23, but she could also have run against Delgado because she lives in that district. So, you know, again, the challenges are potential. I've been involved in, you know, this is my 94th redistricting process. Challenge, always there's legal challenges, and rarely does anything change, any of the challenges change anything.
So we have only 2 minutes left. So other than the Democrats in the state legislature, no one seems very happy with how this, you know, so-called new process has worked. Are there going to be efforts to, you know, fix it moving forward a decade from now, the next time this comes up?
The short answer is yes. I mean, you know, we 10 years ago and for decades have been pushing for a truly independent redistricting process that would look more like the way California does it, certainly than the way New York does it. Whether or not the Democrats are going to be interested in redistricting reform, who knows? I mean, they've always said they have in the past. But, you know, now that they run the state, they may think differently. And when they see what Republicans do in red states, they may feel like it's their partisan, you know, responsibility to sort of balance the scales. But we'll be pushing and we'll see what happens. I hope so.
You know, a lot of speculation in the media, hey, this helps the Democrats maintain control of Congress, have a narrow majority. Now they may pick up 3 seats in New York. But in the rest of the country, the Republicans control most of the state legislature. So they're doing that game as well. And there's a lot more states for them to pick up seats. How is this process, unless there's circuits, you know, working in the rest of the country? Gerrymandering taking place?
Yeah. Gerrymandering is taking place. Gerry is very popular all across the state, the country. You really have to fix redistricting at the national level, because what you're describing is correct. There have been successful court challenges where the Republicans overstepped in some of the states, but that process is all sort of playing out all across the country. The Republicans, I think, have a demographic advantage because of the way the census showed where the population went. More Americans are in red states than they were 10 years ago, for example. But in terms of, you know, how this is all ultimately going to play out, I mean, who knows? I mean, just because you have enrollment advantages in certain districts doesn't mean that that party wins.
We're out of time. Okay. Blair Horner, Executive Director of NYPIRG, NYPIRG.org. This is Mark Dunley for Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. We're joined today by Richard Webster, who is the legal director for Riverkeeper. And a story we've covered several times has been the Champlain Hudson Power Express, basically transmission lines to bring hydropower from Canada down along Lake Champlain under the Hudson River to New York City. Governor Hochul, new governor, recently came out and said they wanted to do it. But in fact, there's actually still some proceedings going before the Public Service Commission. So Richard, you want to give us a quick introduction. You know, why isn't this a good environmental project? I mean, after all, isn't hydro clean energy? We need to help New York City. What's the concerns about this?
Well, okay, well, let's start with the basics. Yes, everybody agrees climate change is a problem, or at least everybody with any sort of scientific view agrees climate change is a problem. And I think that all of those locals believe that we do need to get clean energy into New York City. So building transmission from upstate to downstate makes sense. Now, the problem with this project, the Champlain Hudson Power Express, is it uses Canadian hydro. The problem with Canadian hydro is there are many problems, but just looking at it purely on climate grounds, it actually has extremely high greenhouse gas emissions. It is far from a low carbon energy source. And so in our view, using a high carbon energy source to power New York City doesn't get us very far in terms of reducing climate change. We're going to spend, if they select this project, the Public Service Commission, we're going to spend billions of dollars bringing dirty energy down to New York City. Instead, we should be deploying those dollars to get renewable energy from upstate New York into New York City. That would actually solve our climate problem much better than this project, and would also generate jobs and have other benefits.
Now, the governor and the mayor of New York City clearly thrown their weight behind this project. Now, what are some of the arguments that you hope that the Public Service Commission will consider to reject what the governor and the developers are trying to do here?
Well, there's a law actually that requires New York's energy grid to be zero emissions by 2040. Because these impoundments where the hydropower comes from are actually emitting a lot of carbon, the first thing we believe is that they may be in violation of that law. And if there is a loophole in that law, which we're still currently checking, they're certainly in violation of the spirit of the law. The idea is to get to zero emissions by 2040. This just doesn't do it. And so that's the first problem. The second problem is that they are in danger. I mean, obviously, hydro, you know, incredibly damaging to rivers, incredibly damaging to indigenous peoples, incredibly damaging to the environment around the dams. And Hydro-Québec, the owner of these dams, has a record of trampling on indigenous rights and causing the food chain for indigenous people to be poisoned. And we don't want any more of that. There's a danger that if this project goes ahead, we'll have more of that. We asked Hydro-Québec for an undertaking that they would not build more dams. They would not give us that undertaking. And so if they get a huge premium for their electricity coming down to New York City, that will certainly incentivize them to build more dams, which would be a disaster for the environment, for indigenous peoples, and for rivers.
Now, my understanding, there has been a fair amount of opposition to this proposal by some of the unions, but also, you know, the renewable energy industry, because one of the arguments is, if we're going to spend a couple billion dollars to, you know, develop clean energy, allegedly, would it make more sense to have this actually based and built in New York State rather than, you know, in Canada?
Right. And we agree with that. I mean, that spending these billions of dollars, first of all, for a dirty energy source makes no sense. And second of all, you know, your preference has to be, if you're spending New York's ratepayer dollars, has to be that they be spent in New York. And so both of those grounds, I think, are valid reasons to say they should look at this project again and come up. And there are other alternatives which actually had, I mean, there's one alternative which had both in-state renewables and used the throughway as a way to bring the power down to New York City, which looked like a very good alternative to us. So we know there are better alternatives than Chippy, and we'd like the state to have another look at them.
And I know one issue I worked on took a long time to convince New York State, but now they start to brag about it, was to develop, you know, offshore wind off of, you know, Long Island and New York City, which has much shorter, you know, 15-mile transmission lines rather than a 300 mile transmission line. I do understand there's also, you know, related projects in some of the neighboring states. I think Maine and Massachusetts want to come to mind. And I believe the voters in Maine actually voted against this project recently and has sort of at least temporarily halted it.
Right. So Hydro-Québec's strategy has been to export power. They can get better prices for their power in the US than they can in Canada. And they overbuilt massively. And so they have dams, which they are currently selling electricity that they generate from them pretty cheap. And so they look to do a number of lines into the US, one of which was the line to Massachusetts, which was approved and then has run into trouble. And currently, I think, is in litigation over this recent voter ballot disapproval. So, that's one of our fears, is that this isn't just a one-time thing that Hydro-Québec says, oh, we have too many dams, we'll sell you some energy. Our fear is that they will say, okay, we sold those at a premium in New York City. We got a premium coming into Massachusetts. Let's look for a premium elsewhere and then start to build a lot more dams.
And I remember, I don't know, 30, 35 years ago, being involved in the effort when Mario Cuomo was governor, not Andrew, but Mario, to stop the James Bay Hydro-Québec project. What can people do at this point? You know, this public service hearing is coming up, or decision, right? February 7th, I believe, is the, you know, can the average person write to the Public Service Commission?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a website. If you search on River Keeper and then Chippy, C-H-P-E, or Champlain Hudson Power Express, you'll come to a landing page where we have template comments and people can click on there. They can submit the template as is, or what we'd rather they do is edit it up and put their own concerns in. I should mention that there are also some local concerns about the Hudson River. This cable is going to stir up sediments, PCBs, in the area of some drinking water intakes run by what the group called the Hudson Seven municipalities. It will could potentially cause disruption of sturgeon migration, and it could also cause some disruption to shipping. So there's some local impacts too. But I think, you know, the most important thing here is that we are paying billions of dollars for a project that does not deliver what it's supposed to deliver. And we'd be far better paying those billions of dollars for a project that really delivers for New Yorkers.
Now, does the state legislature have any role to play here?
Well, they may do, as I say, depending on whether that claim about zero emissions at 2040 holds up, the legislature could change that law or could toughen it up. And I think that at the moment, it's all relying on existing law, but, you know, the legislature can change the law at any time.
So we have about a minute left. Any other particular concerns about the project you haven't raised yet?
Let me think. I think one of the things we should say is that this project is not a huge jobs generator, right? That's one of the reasons the unions aren't happy, is because once they built the cable, it needs little maintenance in the absence of any accidents. And it's just a long electric cord that comes all the way from Canada. And so there's very few jobs generated within New York State. So we don't even get the benefit for our billions of dollars. We don't even get the benefit of any jobs either.
So we've been talking with Richard Webster, legal director for Riverkeeper. Riverkeeper's website
is riverkeeper.org.
Thank you very much. And this has been Mark Dunley with the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Historically, the vice president's role as president of the Senate is really supposed to be a pretty ceremonial or ministerial role, opening up the certificates and presenting them to the chambers of Congress to count.
Efforts to reform the Electoral Count Act of 1887 are picking up steam. Legal counsel at Protect Democracy, Genevieve Nadeau, explains the statute is intended to preserve the ability to object to the Electoral College certification in extreme situations. Three Democratic senators have a draft bill to reform the act, which includes curbing the power of the vice president during the certification. A bipartisan group of senators is also looking at updating the act as part of an election overhaul bill. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says he would not support shortening any of the sentences of January 6 protesters who pleaded guilty to crimes.
What we saw here on January the 6th was an effort to prevent the peaceful transfer of power from one administration to another, which had never happened before in our country.
That's a different position than former President Donald Trump, who'd said he'd consider pardoning the protesters if he were to become president again. A resolution will be introduced at this week's RNC winter meeting calling for Republicans Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger to be removed from the January 6th House Committee. The proposal currently has 50 co-sponsors. Senator Ben Ray Lujan is expected to make a full recovery after experiencing a stroke last Thursday. The New Mexico Democrat is currently hospitalized and underwent surgery to ease swelling on his cerebellum. A Senate hearing Tuesday focused on the impact of the pandemic on mental health.
I've never seen our mental health care services stretch so far beyond their capacity as they are now.
Boston University School of Medicine psychiatry professor Michelle Durham testified about the need for coordinated care, while other experts called for more children's mental health resources and expanded access to telehealth visits. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday accused the U.S. of ignoring his security demands in a written document delivered to Moscow last week. However, he sounded hopeful that a diplomatic solution to the Russia-Ukraine crisis could be reached. Israel is rejecting new accusations about its actions towards Palestinians. Secretary General of Amnesty International Agnes Callamard detailed the new report findings, which she says include denials of basic rights and freedoms.
We are here today to call on the international community to take resolute action against the crime of humanity being perpetrated.
State Department spokesman Ned Price said the U.S. rejects the view that Israel's actions constitute apartheid. President Joe Biden kicked off Black History Month with a Twitter video celebrating Black stories as essential to the ongoing story of our nation.
Black culture is America's culture, and we're America because of the centuries of struggles and achievements of Black Americans.
Cole Hemstreet contributed reporting. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm not looking around for recommendation. Furrowed brow, finger raised, everyone's got something to say. Everybody wants to simplify the situation. Palms up, little smirk, slow head shaking, trying to explain. It's true, nobody's got a clue. Everyone wants to be told what to do. So laugh on the one, say soup on the two, and go now. Call the number, misinformation's on the other end. Now snap on the one, on the three, take your ready.
Everyone.